I get being young and rich and a little selfish. I get that, but not at the expense of my city, you know?
Right.
Paul, if you're listening, just could you just not hurt us anymore? Like, you don't have to help us. Just stop hurting us.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah, so just
prepare to... Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm going to be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
I got my sweet joy rocks with them.
That train is off the track.
I feel like you can't just like jump through Neptune and be okay.
Just prepare to.
What the show needs is more dogs and bears and chickens and stuff.
Yeah, so just prepare to be a watch and unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your Pacers audio hour, and member of Almighty Baller Radio. Today is June 4th, 2017. Coming to you from Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Jason Triplett, a.k.a. The Doctor. This show, we're going to talk about Game 1 of the Finals, continue our interminable panic about Paul George, and we'll answer an under-Googleable question, and we'll throw in a stat, just for fun. Well, it's kind of a stat. That's a spoiler. Stay tuned. Joining me to do all these things are two of our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First, from Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? Lots going on here in this end. I've got a couple new jobs. Was out at the bar the other day and met Kevin, who apparently was the originator of Area 55. Sort of the first guy that got the idea, Area 55 going, and was a member of it for 5 years straight. So really nice guy, OG, you know, been around and been rooting hard for the Pacers for a long time. So it's nice to meet him. Good conversation. I'd also like to shout out Jennifer Drinkwater. Super fan of the show. I think back when we started, we had about 5 fans, and she was one of them. She's getting married this coming weekend. So I will be there down in Jackson, Mississippi, but wanted to give her a shout-out.
Shout-out?
Yeah, shout-out, Drinks. Congrats. And that voice you just heard is coming to you from Eugene, Oregon. He's our enforcer, John Harper.
What's going on, fellas? Man. Finals time, just hockey playoffs. It's a good time of year, man. The weather turned nice. It's good stuff. Now let's ruin it with an hour of panic.
Yeah. Well, let's procrastinate first. I want to give a shout out to you guys. Great job on the pod last week. I was super jealous that I couldn't be hanging out in Eugene. The title was The Grass is Literally Greener. And you were talking about L.A. And you're wrong. The grass is brown in L.A. I thought it was going to be about Eugene, and you were going to say that the grass is literally greener in Eugene than Indianapolis.
Didn't they get rid of their lawn watering regulations?
Well, yeah, sure, but you still can't. That sun is a mother.
it was literally in the way that the millennials use it, which is figuratively.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Right. Gotcha. Come
on. Literally doesn't mean literally anymore.
Right. I forgot words have no meaning.
That's right.
Which is helpful for our current administration.
Yeah.
I also want to give a shout out to all of my friends that were at the lake last weekend, most especially little Haley Kane, who is 3.5, 4 years old. But she helped me invent a new genre of music, which I am calling nursery punk. I took the guitar and we were playing a little Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. And she had her little, electronic guitar, play guitar with her. And she was really into screaming. So then we started playing Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round, and she was just yelling, round and round, round and round. It was great. There's a video. If I get the video, we'll post it, because it was awesome. So anyway,
nursery punk.
Nursery punk, yeah. Watch out for it sweeping the nation soon. To get started here, guys, we got some news, some NBA news. There's not a lot going on in the NBA. The finals are happening. But our old friend Christopher Bosch, the Bostrich, is officially retiring from the NBA due to health concerns. And so we're sad to see Bosch go. He was a great player, obviously two-time champion, hilarious commercials and whatnot. I guess the way that we'll frame this discussion is the way that we frame every discussion when somebody retires. Is Chris Bosch a Hall of Famer?
Meh. Mm. Oh, no, he's 100% a Hall of Famer.
Right? 100%.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, great career, you know, out in Toronto, was definitely a lead dog, you know, a main guy, a guy who could carry a team. Then
where did
when
he carry that team to?
I mean, they were making the playoffs, weren't they?
I believe they maybe made the playoffs once.
There you go.
Hall of Fame.
Great numbers, though.
What we're seeing, Harper, is Colson is already starting to lower his expectations for what he defines as success. And as a Pacers fan, that's going to be critical going
yes,
forward.
Yes, this is part of a larger movement.
He sacrificed some top dog numbers to go to Miami and became the third string guy and figured out how to fit in. And was a key component to helping Miami win those titles.
Okay, sure. His numbers were not fantastic in Miami. He certainly was key, I think, to getting that team wins. And, you know, everybody gets in the Hall of Fame now. So,
right.
Sure, he's a Hall of Famer. But I feel like he's borderline. I don't know.
The good news about it officially being a career-ending injury, according to doctors, is that the Heat will be able to remove him from their cap once he's released.
Mm.
So, if you're a Heat fan, that is good news for you. If he is cleared by doctors in the future, he can still return to the NBA. So, it's possible we haven't heard the last of Chris Bosch.
So, now the Heat are going to sign Paul Millsap and ruin all of our plans for getting Paul George to stay.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
The Basketball Reference has a metric here that predicts Hall of Fame, and it gives Bosch a 99.5% chance of making the Hall of Fame.
That's really bizarre.
Higher than Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony, Vince Carter, Tony Parker, Pau Gasol.
Higher than Carter? Wow.
Higher than Pau Gasol?
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah. I clearly, Basketball Reference likes Chris Bosch much more than I do. He was a borderline all-star in Toronto. Hitched himself to LeBron's wagon, and now he's a Hall of Famer?
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. I guess I don't understand basketball.
All right, speaking of basketball, let's move on to the only basketball that's actually going on right now. It's the finals. They finally started. We had 9 days without NBA basketball, but game one was last Thursday, June 1st, and the Warriors take game one, 113-91. Harper, did you get to see this game, and did you have any thoughts on what you saw?
Yeah, absolutely watched this game. It was really fun for me. Probably not so much fun for Cavalier fans, as Golden State really mopped the floor with these guys. When we talked about going into the series, maybe Golden State comes in a little bit rusty and Cleveland can find a way to outplay them in game one. Golden State did look a bit rusty. Klay Thompson and Draymond Green were terrible from the field all night. They missed a bunch of chippies and bunnies around the hoop, especially in the first half. However, what they did really, really well was take care of the basketball. And when that team's not turning the ball over, they're just so tough to beat. And on top of that, they also held the Cavs to something like 37% shooting on the night. So the Warriors did not play their best basketball, and they won by, what, 22?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 35% shooting for the Cavs, and the Warriors only had 4 turnovers the entire game.
Which tied an NBA Finals record.
That is insane.
And so, Harper, you texted me after this game, and you're like, well, what does that mean? And I tried to stand by the comment I made on the pod last week, which is, it doesn't really matter what happens in Game 1 and 2. Basically, what the Cavs have to do is go into Game 5 tied 2-2. That's the goal. Like you if you go down 3-1 or 3-0, you're not going to win this series at all. But if you can get to Game 5 tied at 2, then you've got the best basketball player on the planet in a 3-game series. I think you've got a shot. So for me, it didn't really matter that they got blown out, but man, as much as I tried to back that up and say, hey, my prediction still has a chance, the Warriors look, you're right, they didn't look great and they still were great. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant is amazing. He looked like the best basketball player on the floor, you know, and that's against LeBron James and with Steph Curry on the floor. Like, yeah. He was dominant.
Well, if you are a Cavs fan, if you're Joey, it is worth noting that last year the Cavaliers lost game 1 and 2 by an average of 24 points, I think. Average. Mm-hmm. Which is more than they lost this game by. And people are already calling for, you know, Cleveland's going to get swept and all this other nonsense. This is, you know, that's overreaction theater. LeBron is going to make his statement in this series one way or another. I still see the road to Cleveland winning a championship this year as unlikely. I mean, what LeBron's being asked to do this year is just so difficult, because you're absolutely right. Kevin Durant looked like the best player on the floor, and that means LeBron has to guard him. He had to guard Harrison Barnes before. That means that he could take possessions off, he could chill, he could rest, he could
help on other
he
guys.
He could help, or, he can rotate. Yeah. All that's out the window, right? If you blink, Kevin Durant is going to be at the rim. He had more dunks than his team had turnovers.
Yeah.
In the first half, he had more dunks. I think he had 6 in the first half. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a long series, and the advantage for Cleveland here is that there's a lot of rest in between every game, and so that's critical because LeBron is, you know, super good on 2 days rest or 3 days rest. So game 2 is not until tonight. We're recording this Sunday. And then there's another 2 days off before game 3. So, but the thing that I don't see Cleveland being able to do is slow the Warriors down. Like, they don't have anybody that they can throw on Curry or Thompson, which is trouble, right? Because those guys can fill it up. So if you get an elite game from LeBron James, maybe you slow down Kevin Durant and limit him to, say, 20 points. But Curry's going to be able to get wherever he wants on the floor. Kyrie can't keep him in check. Shumpert, sure. I don't think, really can keep him in check. And even if you do that, then there's a third dude in Klay Thompson who can just get whatever shot he wants whenever
and
wants
didn't
it.
And was cold in this game and didn't do anything, and they still won by 22.
Yeah. Right.
And part of the reason that Durant scored so much is because in transition, they were floating out to the corner so that Curry wouldn't have the open threes, right? That was a defensive decision that just led to a bunch of dunks and just got Kevin Durant hot, right? They're going to have to do something about that, but it, you know, that was the game where Steph wasn't super hot, right? So next game, I mean, you may see this guy hit 9 threes and 5 of them uncontested because they're trying to adjust.
Right, and so I think for Cleveland to be successful, they have to change the style of basketball that they play. I think they have to slow it down, and they have to be real. You know, they did a horrible job taking care of the ball in game one, super as well slow. As the Warriors did. They did just as bad, and you can't afford to do that. You can't let the Warriors get easy points, right? Like, no. You can't let them get runouts.
No, because it's scored, easy enough for them to score in the half court. Yeah,
exactly. So I think that if Cleveland can do that, which they're certainly capable of, I mean, they have 3 all-stars on the roster and people that have been in wars and stuff like that. So if you take care of the ball and work the shot clock and, you know, they need to be playing games that are in the 90s, basically.
Yep, agreed.
Well, but this isn't what this team did this year.
Right, exactly. So that's what my next point is.
Can they flip
that's
the switch?
Not them at their best, right? So yeah. Like they are a team that has excelled in these playoffs by playing a little bit up tempo and playing small, right? And like spreading the floor and shooting a ton of threes. And that is trouble when you're playing the Warriors team, because those long threes
lead
to long rebounds, which lead to runouts, which lead to a frenetic pace, which is exactly what the Warriors want you to be doing, right? Mm-hmm. That's where they excel. So I think that they really need to lean on Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love is the key to the series. If you can get Kevin Love successful in the post and sort of make it an old school, grind it out, play super duper physical on the defensive end as well, then you got a shot. But if they can't figure out a way to do that, then I don't see them pulling out a game against this Warriors team, which is uber focused this
year.
Well,
nobody can guard Kyrie Irving either. I mean, the thing is, the Cavs have some offensive options here. And I think that their role players will play better at home. Like they all play terribly in this game. You know, Kyle Korver missed a bunch of open threes. Like, I think they have some offensive options that are going to go better for them as the series goes on. But I agree with you. Slowing down the pace and mucking this thing up is the key to winning this series. And that's not really what they've done all season. So, but I think they have the personnel to do it. I think they can still do it. I think Shumpert and Jair Smith and Tristan Thompson can be physical.
They have to give quality minutes to Richard Jefferson and Darren Williams and Derek Williams. No, this roster is not built for this. I'm not sure they're built for anything. This is a really flawed team.
They just ran through the East like a, you know, warm knife through butter.
They have the best player on the
planet. That says more about the East than it does about the quality of the Cavs. But I think that the window of opportunity that I saw was that in game one, at least, the referees let a lot of stuff go. Exactly. They let it be a very physical series. And that normally plays to, or that should play to the Cavs' advantage, but they weren't playing as physical as Golden State was. And it, you know, that caused a lot of problems. Golden State forced 12 steals and Cleveland had zero, you know, because they basically just weren't, they didn't have active hands. They weren't making forcing people into tough spots. They were letting people run and cut wherever they wanted to go. And you just can't do that, you know. And so maybe it takes, you know, because they ran through the East so easily, they didn't really have to put forth a defensive effort,
right.
I don't think, like they're going to have to against these Warriors. And now you get 2 days or 3 days, whatever it is, to look at game film and say, look, remember, anytime Curry or Thompson or Durant make a cut through the lane, Tristan Thompson, throw an elbow. Like, just throw a hip out. If you get called for a foul, so what? Like, you have to make those guys feel you anytime they move, basically.
But, I mean, you're asking this team to flip a switch in game two or three of the finals. They've been looking for defense since the All-Star break.
Sure.
Is it reasonable for them to just be able to turn it on at this point? I mean, it may be that the Warriors are actually the more physical team this year. I mean, outside of Tristan Thompson, what do they have? I mean, interesting strategy from Warriors in game one. They played some ISO ball. I mean, they had some assists, but they went after guys. They went after Kevin Love. When Tristan Thompson got the ball down low, they doubled him up, and they forced jump balls, and they figure, worst-case scenario, we send this guy to the line, and he can't shoot. Like, they have a strategy for dealing with this team. And I don't know if they have the personnel to stand up.
I mean, I think ultimately you're right. The thing that they have going for them is they have a ton of veterans. So they can be cerebral about the game, right? So it's not as if they have a system. They do have a system, but it's not as if they have a system and guys that can only play in that system, right? So if you tell these guys, like, this is the way we need to play, then they can go out and execute that. Whether or not they're going to do it successfully enough to pull out a victory or slow down the Warriors, I agree with you. I don't think they'll be able to, but I think that they can change the way that they play for sure. Whether they can do it successfully or not.
It would have been nice to see them at least try to practice it at some point in the playoffs before now.
Right.
For me to have faith that they could do that.
But I felt like they also, about 3 or 4 minutes into the third quarter, when they realized that this thing was over 15 points, you know, the Cavs kind of mentally checked out, right? Like, I feel like on some level they were like, eh,
maybe save our energy.
Yeah, we've got backup plans and defenses we're going to throw at them and stuff that we could try, but we're not going to do it right now because this game's out of hand. I just felt like all of them checked out. You know, you don't want to just give up on a game.
Well, if that doesn't scream, I'm about to win a championship, what does?
Well, you don't want to give up on a game in the finals for sure, but, you know, at some point, maybe don't show your hand on some stuff on a game when it's clearly not your night.
Of course not. But that doesn't mean that you let the effort go. I mean, LeBron kept his guys on the floor until there was 3 minutes to go, and that forced the Warriors to do the same, right? I mean, LeBron wasn't going to let his guys just go sit on the bench.
Sure.
Right?
But I didn't think they were cutting as hard or working as hard on defense as they were in the first half. I thought
the Warriors were making them look bad.
Yeah, maybe.
The first half was super entertaining. I mean, the first quarter was amazing. The energy level was awesome. Mm-hmm.
I thought the Cavs needed to be within 5 at the half.
I was thinking to myself the whole time. Yeah, sure. But the reason was that the Warriors were missing Chippies and Bunnies. Right? Yeah. Like, I was watching the game, and I was like, the Warriors should be up by 15 or 20 right now. Exactly. Like, the game was being played at their pace, and, you know, Cleveland was hanging on. Cleveland was making shots. And playing at that pace, but there was no way they were going to keep it up, and the Warriors were unlucky and rusty, right? So I kind of had a sense that it was going to get, unless something changed at halftime.
I really thought the Warriors were fearless with their substitution patterns too, right? I mean, they just threw their young guys out there and let them have at it. They'll sit Curry and Durant at the same time. They don't care. They're like, we're at home. Yeah. This is our game.
Let JaVale McGee get out there and get some confidence and grab some O-boards.
He may end up being the most physical guy in the series on purpose or by accident. Who knows what goes through JaVale's mind.
Draymond is offended by that. He's going to kick you in the nuts.
He'll do that on purpose. JaVale might hit two guys with two separate elbows at the same time on accident. We just don't know what's going to happen.
Right. Well, we'll see. I mean, game two is tonight, and, certainly – it's a long series, and the Cavs are literally the champs, and I don't mean that in a millennial way. They're literally the champs right now, so they're not going to go quiet into that good night.
Yeah,
for sure.
What do you think about all the lovey-lovey stuff after Game One? This was big talk on ESPN that, you know, Ty Lue said that, you know, this is one of the greatest teams ever assembled, and it seemed like the Warriors were just getting props from the Cavs after a blowout. What do you guys make of that?
Is that strategy? Is it overconfidence is Golden State's weakness?
I mean, that's always what it feels. I mean, LeBron always has a strategy, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's – let's stroke their ego and let them think they're awesome
and then we have no chance
into a false sense
thing.
Of security. Right. Yeah.
I'm with you guys, but it seemed like all ESPN was all a Twitter.
So basically that they were just saying that the Cavs were rolling over?
Yeah, which is ridiculous, right? LeBron is always playing the game within the game. LeBron knows that he lost the first two on the road and won a championship last year. He's a smart guy. I'm pretty sure he remembers last year.
Yeah,
they say that he remembers, like, plays from his rookie year. Like
high school.
Exactly. Yeah, he's got, like, a photographic memory. I think he remembers how it went down last year.
Yeah, this seems classic Phil Jackson move or something. Right?
So. Quick shame on you to all analysts who not letting LeBron be LeBron.
That's a 24-hour news cycle.
Have faith. Have faith in the greatness of LeBron.
Yeah, but how did nobody take the other angle?
Sure. Well, that's why people listen to us, Jason.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Good. Keep doing dumb stuff. lame-stream media.
With your fake news.
All right, let's take a break here and shift gears and do what is one of my favorite segments. You know, last week you guys did a movie segment, and I'm going to do a quick shout-out/preview to my sister's podcast, Falling in Love with Trip and Brick. So check that out on iTunes. And what they do on their show is they talk about romantic comedies. And what we're going to do this summer, don't know when it's going to happen, but it's definitely going to happen. We're going to do a special crossover, Underwatchables, falling in love with the Underwatchables, maybe we'll call it, episode, where we watch a romantic comedy and review it with them.
I like this idea.
So tweet in your suggestion. We would like to do a basketball-themed romantic comedy. There's a few out there, so tweet in and let us know what your favorite basketball or sports-themed romantic comedy
is. Forget Paris. It's a classic.
Oh, yeah.
Love and Basketball.
Sure, sure.
Bull Durham.
Bull Durham Sports. That's good.
Bull Durham, yeah.
There's a romantic
Major League.
Poetic Justice, was that one? Didn't they have that?
Yeah, is that the Janet Jackson movie?
Yeah, isn't that about basketball?
Sure.
I never saw it. Maybe it's about poetry.
I feel like it's, yeah.
The sport is a poetry slam.
And it's poems about basketball. Yeah. Okay, but so that leads me to this week's Undegoogleable segment. And what we do here, listeners, is we take a topic, a question that somebody has sent in. And so what it is it's something that you're curious about that you would normally, you know, Google. But don't Google it. Instead, send that to us, and we will put our collective minds together and serve as Google for you. And the answer you'll get will be better and more true than what Google can give you.
Oh, are we doing under Googleables?
That was the plan.
Super excited.
You told us we had to, so.
You said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
I'm going to skip all the great write-ins and questions we got. I appreciate those. Because I
thanks, fans. I'm ignoring you.
No, we'll get to you, especially as the summer rolls on. But this one came to me because I was thinking about – did the pod last week with Harper, and Harper was the host. And I was thinking about how of all the two-man pods that everybody has done, there's an order of succession about who's going to host. And I don't know what that makes me. I think it makes me, in the presidential order of succession, and then I didn't know what the answer was. And I figure maybe we could speculate between the three of us and figure out what the order of succession is for the president. Especially with a lot of stuff going on in politics, maybe this is a hot topic. Does anybody know the order of succession so I can describe what I am in the Undegoogleables?
Okay. Yeah, I think we can hammer this out.
Okay. So you got the president. If the president is gone, you got the vice president.
Yep.
If the vice president's gone, you got the Speaker of the House.
You get Paul Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul Ryan currently. And then after that, I'm pretty much out.
Orrin Hatch is next.
So what is
but,
what's his?
But what is Orrin Hatch? The Senate pro tem, or something?
I think that's
or Senate majority
majority whip or something.
He's the senior, so it may just be tenure for the majority because he's been in office for at least 150 years.
Okay, so you go with the senior most senator after that.
Yeah, he has a title, but I know it's Orrin Hatch that I can tell you. So
okay.
And is it always of the current ruling party, if you will?
Basically, yes. Term, so yeah. I was thinking about this recently, and I was surprised to learn that no matter what happens, basically Republicans taking over, right? Because after this, it goes to all the secretary positions, SecDef, Secretary of the Interior. Betsy DeVos is on there. Ahead somehow of, like, the Secretary of Energy. You know, which is a position that Nobel Prize winners now take, and somehow
or Rick Perry
or Rick Perry,
or yeah,
Rick
yeah.
Perry. Yeah. but basically, the line of succession was set up during the Cold War, right? And the reason that it was there was in case of nuclear launch, and you know, we lost a bunch of our cabinet, so it made sense in that context to have people from the same party in there. I don't think anyone ever dreamed up a scenario where the legitimacy of the party itself would be in question.
Okay. So so no one on this list would be from the other party.
You'd have to go really far down.
Okay.
Well, unless you had appointed somebody from the other party to a cabinet position.
Sure.
Which if is, you wanted, yeah, which is a rarity.
Yeah, if you wanted to the most qualified person in your cabinet, you might go across party lines.
Yeah, it is non-existent in this case.
Okay.
Right.
So it's basically the cabinet. So the president has elected the cabinet. After the fourth person, you're saying it's all the cabinet.
Yeah, it's a bunch of secretary positions. So.
Does it? Can we try to figure out the order?
Yeah,
of the
secretaries? that's what I'd like to do.
Okay.
What's the most important secretary?
I think. My guess is defense.
Okay, I like this idea, especially if it was brought up in the Cold War stuff, right?
Right. But I'm not sure.
Do you think it's state?
Well, I think it's state because I think the problem with SecDef is that guy is often military affiliated, and the separation military power from political power is something that we've always guarded against.
So he might be near the bottom then.
I'm not sure he's even on the list.
Oh, okay. I like
that. So I think it goes Secretary of State.
Okay, Secretary of State would be 5. Okay. Do we know how deep this goes? I mean, how many people before... How deep does this rabbit hole go?
Well, there are, what, 13 cabinet positions or something like that?
So you think it's the whole cabinet broken down, so it might go 17, something like that?
Well, I think that the actual line of succession... I mean, after you get through all those, I'm pretty sure it keeps going, and then the other party gets involved, right? Because, I mean, I think it goes, like, into the 20s, 30s, 40s. Like,
my goodness. Deep.
Did they rejigger the lineup when they created Homeland Security?
Yes.
And made it a... Okay.
Had to add that. My assumption is you would probably add... You would throw that at the bottom, right, if it's new? Or would you throw that at the top?
No, well, it's a more important position. I'm pretty sure it's in there somewhere. And I would put it nearer the top.
Can we name the cabinet, the secretaries?
Can you give me a number? How many we got? I'll write this down.
I'm going to say a dozen. It's above more than a dozen, I think.
All right. Jim Jeffries had a...
for sure.
A funny spot this week on, I think it was Trevor Noah. And he's like, you know things are bad when you know people's names. Like, I don't know any of the names of Obama's secretaries, but I know all of Trump's. Because I'm scared.
So the cabinet, so we need to know, we think there's 12 to 15, or are we just going with 12?
Something like that.
I mean, if we can get to 12, I'd be very proud.
All right, so we're going to name the cabinet. So secretary.
All right, let me go through what I got.
Okay.
So I got state.
Okay.
Interior.
Okay.
Health and Human Services. HUD. Education. Agriculture. Homeland Security. Energy. And defense is what I have so far. Treasury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Education, did you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Homeland Security, okay, that's good. Ooh, I know the one I was going to make myself in this metaphor, Secretary of Transportation. I feel like he's probably not real high on the list of order of succession.
Or she.
Correct. But this is currently Trump's cabinet, so it's...
odds are it's a white male. You got any more, Harper? Harper's just...
What about, like, nope, what about the environment? Is that one?
There's an EPA head.
There's an EPA head, but I don't know if they're a secretary. I think there's just the director of the EPA. They fall under energy, maybe?
Okay.
Well, actually, I think the EPA is set up to be an independent watchdog, right? So...
Oh, similar to like the FBI,
yeah,
or whatever. Okay.
Do we have one for technology now? Like when we moved in, did we add one for tech?
No, Obama had a task force, but
okay. Technology czar.
Yeah, but there's no secretary position for such a thing.
Economy.
That's treasury.
Right. Yeah. Okay. What else do we need cabinet members for?
Trying to think of what...
Business?
Yeah.
I think that's a good start, yeah.
Veterans Affairs.
Okay, veterans.
Commerce. Labor.
So I thought it was
commerce business. And labor.
Oh, I forgot about labor. Man.
Should add that.
So that would make 14. Is there more than that?
I think that's it.
Woo!
Okay. Order of succession.
Yes.
VP.
Okay.
Speaker of the House.
Right.
President pro tem of the Senate.
Okay.
Secretary of State.
Right.
Treasury.
Ooh.
Weirdly. Defense.
Oh, it's pretty high. Higher than we thought. Mm.
Attorney General is in the seventh spot. Secretary of the Interior, then Agriculture, then Commerce, then Labor, then HHS, then Housing and Urban Development, Transportation.
Yeah.
Although it's there's something weird going on.
There's...
Oh, because the current Secretary of Transportation is Elaine Chao, who is not a natural-born citizen.
Mm.
And so, therefore, ineligible for the presidency. Okay. Transportation, then energy, then education, then vet affairs, and then Homeland Security. So they did just tack Homeland Security onto the end of the list.
Like, we don't want to have to, like, vote on this. We'll just tack them on the end. So I guess transportation... Education is after transportation. Is that correct? Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah, education is third to last.
Okay. Well, so I would be in the undebeatable order of succession. I am the Secretary of Education. A lot of people got to get impeached or, you know, before I get to host anything. A
lot of guest hosts.
Yeah, exactly.
Call in sick.
It's because right, cool. Nobody cares about education.
All right, let's move on to Joey's Stat of the Week.
Joey's Stat of the Week!
And this is not actually provided by Joey. This is provided by me. And then it's not so much a stat as a thing that you should check out. The statistic is 194. And that is the number of dunks that Giannis Antetokounmpo had this year.
I want to watch a.
And conveniently, somebody has made a YouTube of all of these clips, all of these dunks. So we will link to that in the show notes, and that's your treat. Go look at all these dunks.
Thanks. Like it.
A little treat for the listener.
All right. So I would recommend pausing the podcast and going and doing that now, so that you're in a better frame of mind for the discussion that's about to happen. Because so what we're going to talk about now is our continuing efforts to maybe talk ourselves off of the ledge or talk ourselves into jumping off of the ledge, which is things happening in Pacer Nation. So as everyone knows, Paul George did not make the All-NBA team, any of the All-NBA teams. His future with the franchise is in limbo. We've talked in the past about potential trade scenarios that we might like to see happen. Over the last couple of weeks, some reporting has come out that has raised my levels of anxiety, which are that neither Boston or LA seems willing to trade the one or two pick for Paul George, and B, Paul George seems like he is already thinking about how he can restore the Lakers to prominence or something like that. Is that what I got, Coulson?
Yeah, I think he's probably already house shopping out in LA. So
isn't he from there? He probably already has a house there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's from Palmdale.
Palmdale.
Yeah. So Sam Amick, I guess I hope I'm saying that right.
Do you care? Not a friend of the pod right now.
Not okay? A friend of the pod. Right. He writes for the USA Today. He's the guy who came up with that phrase that freaked everybody out, that Paul George was hell-bent on going to the Lakers.
I know I'm blaming the messenger right now, but I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's fine. He apparently keeps referring to this inside source who must remain anonymous because of the sensitivity of the issue. But he's written like three or four articles recently about how Paul George is definitely wanting to go to L.A. Just read you this paragraph real fast. After making it all the way back from his horrific leg injury in the summer of 2014 and threatening to unseat the great LeBron James in those back-to-back Heat Pacers conference finals, George finds himself more focused on legacy than ever. And whether it's realistic or not, the 27-year-old who grew up idolizing Bryant clearly believes he can lift the Lakers out of the darkness. It doesn't say, hey, I you know, it doesn't say the Pacers have a better chance of winning now than the Lakers do, because I think all of us are saying it's kind of ridiculous. Why would he go to a bad team out west where it's really hard to win? But as far as, you know, Sam is concerned, it's about kind of filling in Kobe's shoes and getting this team back to prominence. At that point, you feel like, hey, maybe I can bring in other all-stars and we can start challenging, you know, at least trying to make the playoffs for LA, and that would be sort of satisfying to him. I think it's ridiculous to move out west because nobody's getting out of to the finals out west for the next 5 to 6 years, right? Golden State's a juggernaut. Why wouldn't you stay in the East?
Well, I think you have to look at what the motivations really are, right? I mean, if this is not something that we can necessarily know beforehand, but if what Paul George is saying is all I care about is legacy and winning championships, and then he goes to the LA Lakers, then that was bullshit.
Right. He clearly cares about legacy in his head, right? Like, I think he grew up a huge fan of the Lakers, and to play on that team that you grew up watching and to be a star in that on that team seems to really matter to him. And
well, we can't compete with that. We can never
right.
be the
we can't that's right.
So if that's all that he cares about, then we never had a chance from draft day, did we?
I think if
probably
we,
not
I think if we had continued to go to the Eastern Conference Finals and the finals and stuff, maybe he still probably would have left us eventually. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like at least the way that these things are reading, that he's already out the door. My good friend Steve is a Lakers fan, and he is just he recently has just been all but cackling because he's convinced this is a done deal. He thinks the Pacers have zero leverage. There's zero reason for the Lakers to trade anything for him because he's going to come in the offseason.
Well, he's right, but I tell you what I don't need in my life is Laker fans emerging to dance on our graves again. Like, I just – I don't miss that, and that's what's happening right now.
But so I'm going to get back to this. I mean, assuming this is true, that PG is focused on legacy, couldn't one argue that the better legacy would be – you know, staying with the franchise for one's entire career and leading them to their first NBA title, you know, wouldn't that be a hell of a legacy for somebody to have?
Sure. And Kobe was with one team his entire career, if he's one of his idols.
Right.
Or if
right.
his idol, sure.
Yeah. But is Paul George or this organization good enough to make that happen?
Probably not. I don't know, and maybe I have a overly inflated sense of the importance of Indiana in basketball, but seems like a place where one could be revered and have a legacy, right? I mean, we love Reggie Miller like none other. Yeah, he sure. was, you know, a borderline all-star.
Right.
I mean, I'm with you, but again, I question the motivation here, right? I don't really think this is about legacy, right? Because I'm with you. If all he cared mm-hmm. about was how much love he got from the hometown, then that would be one thing. But I don't right. think that is the thing. And I think he knows that Lakerland would, you know, there's more people there. More people equals more love.
I guess. Or is he thinking about legacy in the sense of making the Hall of Fame, right? And he sees the Lakers as an opportunity for him to not only potentially build a winner, but also in the interim years sort of put up fantastic stats on a crappy team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he thinks that far ahead, but that's one possibility, I guess.
I mean, if the purpose is to win championships, then the Lakers isn't the place to go. You pick
right. he should
the Spurs,
go to
Spurs, the Cavs, right. potentially Boston. You know, there's plenty of teams, or of course Golden State if you're willing to take the pay cut, right?
Sure.
I mean, there are teams out there that are, you know, in a position to win now with the addition of a Paul George. The Lakers are not one of those teams.
What are the Pacers? Does this change the Pacers' calculus going forward? You know, we a couple weeks ago were saying you could play Boston and LA off of one another to extract a very high price, and now it seems like neither one of those teams is willing to trade their first round draft pick, which I think is actually smart by both of us. If you're the Celtics and you think you could say sign Gordon Hayward this offseason and keep the number one pick for a guy who people think is a franchise changer and Markelle Fultz, that seems like the smarter thing to do, especially since LeBron James is still in your conference and the Warriors are still juggernauts mm-hmm. for the next 2 years, right? Is there somebody that the Pacers can find to trade with that will rent Paul George for a year?
Well, so here's my thought on this. I feel like that the number one pick is out the window for Boston. I think they want to plan for the future, and I think they also want to play for now. I think that they would still trade for Paul George. But I think our only hope at this point would be to try to get the Brooklyn pick from them next year, right? Which could probably be a top five pick, and say to them, hey, look, you can get your Fultz, and you can still have your Paul George, and we'll take a piece and next year's Brooklyn pick. And that might put them on the table, back on the table, which then, you know, because they're not necessarily sacrificing the future for a potential 1 year rental, they could say, hey, look, maybe this year, if we're successful, we can talk him into staying with us. That starts making the Lakers sweat, and then maybe you can extract some stuff from the Lakers. As it is now, because Boston, that play is off the table, I think L.A. is not going to give us anything. But if you could figure out how to manipulate this, you could maybe get some more interest.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to trade Brooklyn's pick for next year.
That's the only thing I could think of. Because outside of that, it looks like we're dead in the water, right?
I mean, it's Denver and Atlanta right now, right?
But but how much are they going to give up for a year rental if they are totally convinced? Because is this Paul George's agent? Is this the GM of the Lakers? Who's saying that this stuff is he's hell-bent on coming here? Because whoever it is doing Indiana an incredible disservice. Well,
it's probably Paul George, bro.
Well, if that's the case, then he just crapped all over our porch and walked out.
That happened. We missed our opportunity at the last trade deadline. That was our last chance to get something back for Paul George. And unless he makes an All-NBA team this year and we win 50 games, he's gone.
I think even then, I think he's gone.
I think probably, but not definitely. I think $210 million is a lot of reasons to stay.
So here's the scenario. Let's say he's going to walk anyway, but we're going to get pennies on the dollar. We basically have to root for a guy all season that we know is on the way out the door, and we're not going to get anything back, and it's going to set our franchise back for a decade. Like, that's what we're looking at now. Like, we have to trade him for...
Well, we had this conversation in February at the trade deadline.
Yeah, we knew it then, and it's still true now.
I've been in denial for, you know, I go on and off between being in certain states of denial, but, like, yeah, I think Harper, you're right, that was our opportunity to get maximal return, and basically every day that passes now, his value goes down, mm-hmm. right?
Because before that, people didn't know if he was going to make an All-NBA team, you know. Mm-hmm. There were chances for other teams to potentially – a Boston, right, with a player coach that's loved with great upside and a solid young roster. Like,
they don't know if they're going to get the one pick yet. You know, it's still all a gamble.
They could have talked themselves into thinking that maybe they had a chance to, you know, re-sign Paul George. That's gone, right? That's gone for everyone. So anybody who's trading for Paul George at this point is probably doing something dumb. When we look back on this, maybe we'll figure out who the leaker is. But Paul George has never said that this stuff's not true, right? Paul George is the guy saying it, and you know it's true because he's never contradicted it. And that's how he's done Indiana this great disservice, because he took our bargaining position off the table for us. So, I mean, you know, he's spitting in our eye while he walks away, right?
Well,
I mean,
because the deal is he doesn't want L.A. to trade a bunch of assets away, so his team sucks when he gets there, right? I mean, he's mm-hmm. he's manipulating this. You know, now he's got all these young pieces. The legitimate shout out to Lakers Legacy, who's on Almighty Baller Network, they are legitimately asking the question right now whether Jordan Clarkson for Paul George straight up is a fair value. Like, that's where they think our leverage is at this point.
I mean, that's what we can get, right? I mean, maybe we can talk the Nuggets into doing something dumb, or Atlanta trading a couple draft picks. But last season, Atlanta had four first rounders on the table, and we just passed. It barely even made the news, right? Because Paul George wasn't being traded. But it didn't make any sense then, and now we're exactly where we should be based upon the decisions that we made.
We were talking about three pieces and a draft pick from Boston was on the table. You know, we were... They
should have pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was Larry's last hurrah. That was it.
So then I guess the question is, so this becomes a behavioral economics question to me, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. This is game theory.
If the best deal on the table is Jordan Clarkson for Paul George, as crazy as that sounds, that's a move that you have to make.
Right.
Right? You can't go into this like sort of, it's not quite the gambler's fallacy, but like that the situation can't be as bad as it possibly is, right? And hold it's sunk cost. That's the
right
thing.
Right? Well, we talked about this several weeks ago, right? Like, you strategize for, you know, the best case scenario and what you want to have happen. So if we have a road to, you know, signing a Paul Millsap, you know, and putting ourselves in a position to maybe at least court Paul George in a meaningful way, then you try and execute that. However, if what you're left with is this guy's definitely not staying, it doesn't matter what the market does. You have to make the best decision, right? You can't control what the market is necessarily. Like, you know, Colson, you're right. We can try and, you know, jimmy rig it so that, you know, there's a little bit more heat out there on him. But at the end of the day,
I'll
it kind of is what it is.
A little bit more.
If you can get a little bit more, that's great. But the reality is the market is what it is. And if the decisions that's made is that you can't keep him, you have no choice but to trade him for the best value you can get, even if it's next to nothing. Because next to nothing is still more than nothing.
Is it, though? Like, I mean, Jordan Clarkson at $18,000 a year, whatever the hell he's getting paid, is is that better than just getting the cap space? You know,
I like Clarkson.
Harper, you make the argument all the time that cap space is not what the Pacers need because we can't get free agents. Mm-hmm. But cap space also makes you able to facilitate trades and take on, you know, guys that are getting cut.
But if you
like
trade
that
for Clarkson, you're still getting a ton of cap space. You're still getting a ton of cap space. And you're getting an asset back.
Just not a ton of cap space. You're just getting some. I mean,
well, he can't be making.
Isn't he on his rookie deal?
What is he making?
I don't know. Yeah. He's making too much, I'm sure.
He's making significantly less than Paul George.
Let's Google that. What's Jordan Clarkson getting made? Anyway, I don't. Do we like him? I guess we like him. Sure.
Yeah, I like
Clarkson. I like him better than nothing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Your options are a pile of garbage or nothing. Yeah. And it seems like even in that case, you should take a pile of garbage and leaf through it. And maybe there's some recyclables that you can trade in for, you know, a few cents.
Maybe there's some bottom.
You,
so you
can
get a nickel
get
back.
10 cents.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you
right.
Don't know. So Clarkson's on a 4-year, $50 million deal through 2020. So you save 20 mil.
Okay.
And all you right have a serviceable starting two.
All right. This is terrible, and this is going to make the L.A. fans insufferable. I hate this so much.
You mean even more insufferable?
Even more insufferable.
Right.
Like this is like a double whammy. Not only are we losing our best player that the Pacers have ever had, but he's going to walk to L.A., and we're not going to get anything in return or something crappy, and L.A. is just going to laugh all the way to the bank.
Where's Reggie Miller and his recruiting, right? Reggie Miller's a California guy, right?
Right.
He came to Indiana. Mm-hmm.
Spent
is
his
he
entire
in Paul George's
career?
Exactly. He had that exact same choice in front of him, right, during his own career, and he picked Indiana.
Yep.
Is he out there pushing for us? Is he in Paul George's ear?
He was at some point, you know, talking to him about the same thing that I was hinting at earlier, is that you'll become a god in Indiana if you stay there for your entire career. And that brings with it a lot of awesome things. And you will be able to compete for a title because that franchise takes things seriously and is pretty consistently in contention, right?
Yeah. There's not a lot of distractions in Indiana. You kind of
right,
just play
exactly
the basketball.
And we're never going to tank. We're never going to do a, you know, a Sixers move or whatever. Like
right. Never say
always
never.
Yeah.
Looking forward to next
offseason. We haven't historically.
I agreed.
So over the last, like, whatever, two decades,
since 91,
the Pacers have been one of
probably
the more consistently successful franchises in the NBA.
Right? Excellent in our mediocrity.
Right, exactly, yeah. But we make the conference finals, you know, more than a lot of teams
it's
in the Eastern
more than most teams, actually.
Right.
It's true. I'm just down.
And I think we missed the playoffs like four times since 91, something like that. Like, that's really impressive.
We're a very good franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're a poor man's version of the Spurs.
Yeah.
It's great.
There you go. I like that. See, you cheered me up, Jason.
That cheered you up?
It did.
That's so sad.
This is disastrous. I just did not realize how it is. Last week we were talking and it was like, this is bad. The market has cooled. I didn't realize that everybody pretty much has decided that this is a done deal and that we're totally screwed.
Well, we'll see. I mean, crazy things happen on draft night, right? So, you know, you could imagine that some, you know, and Kevin Pritchard is notoriously aggressive on draft night. So you could imagine us getting something going on draft night, a two-teamer or a three-teamer that we talk somebody into, and at least get picks back and start the process of rebuilding. Because I agree with you. And the other thing is that the point that you brought up earlier, Colson, was that, you know, if we don't trade Paul George, then we are sitting here watching our favorite team with our best player as this dude that we know that is just going to leave us.
He's
and we have to cheer
really
for that.
Really slowly ripping our heart out, like super slow-mo
exactly.
for 82
And I want
games.
No part of
right.
that.
So like, let's say we go get like a piece that helps us, and this is a 51-plus team, you know? But Paul George is just going to walk away at the end of it? That's going to be just super weird.
Well, you can focus on the positives of this team, which are, you know, Miles Turner. Okay, that's where it's the list stops.
I like right.
GR3 is a decent guy.
Lance is back. He's fun to watch.
I mean, we're definitely bringing Teague back if this is where we're at, right? I mean,
make him dance, Lance.
Hopefully he is willing to, you know, put pen to paper.
Yeah, hopefully he's willing to jump on board this sinking ship while all the rats run. The one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is this. So LA has the number 2 overall pick. Clearly they want Paul George. I don't like the guy who's the number 2 overall pick. Jerry Colangelo this week came out and said, we love Lonzo Ball, essentially, but he comes with a lot of baggage, right? And that is the knock on Lonzo. The kid can play ball, but his stroke's all funky, and his family's just gonzo, right?
Yep.
So maybe you can package Paul George in an 18 pickup and move up to 2, a place where I personally would be trading down anyway to get away from Lonzo.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that trade's out there, but, you know, I'd consider that if I was LA, right? I mean,
sure.
How much are you really giving up there? I mean,
especially if you already like D'Angelo Russell as a point guard in the future. Right?
Sure. No, I agree that that seems reasonable, but if you think, honestly, that you don't have to give up any assets at all, because who cares, then why would you do it?
Because you're trading down anyway, and, you know, why do tomorrow what you can do today?
Right, and we did talk about that. There are some unknown factors.
And if you're giving up 0 of your current assets, right?
I would consider it. That's all I'm saying. And you don't even have to have LA commit to that, but if you can at least, like I said, turn up the heat on Paul George a little bit, right? I mean, maybe that you can convert that to something. Because I just – the road to getting him back is just so narrow right now.
Why do I going to send him to where he wants to go?
Whoever who has the most stuff. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, let's say I can talk Brooklyn into giving me something.
Colson's Colson's ready to put horse heads in people's beds right now.
This is bad. This is worse than I thought. Every day it gets worse than I thought.
Yep.
Welcome to the next year of your life.
That's just 2017 for you, buddy.
It's been a rough year.
Let's stop there. Yeah. We want to thank you for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And keep sending in those tweets and emails. If you want to do that, you can reach us on Twitter. We're at Undebeatables. If you prefer the Facebooks, we have a page there. It's /TheUndebeatables. We have a contact form on our website, TheUndebeatables.com. If you want to listen to the show as a podcast, you can do so. Just subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere you get your podcasts. If you're in any of those places, especially iTunes, take a second and give us a review. It helps other Pacers fans around the world who need people to commiserate with right now. So really, it's an act of kindness if you give us a review. And if you're, you go back to that website, and we have t-shirts for sale there. Get one of those.
For our once and always coach, Bobby Sklenard, now in the Hall of Fame. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
I'm not sure I'm done being sad yet.
I know. I feel like I need to still talk about this. It doesn't.
I haven't quite worked through it. Like, I'm still emotionally.
I'm with you.
There. Yeah.
What just happened?
You know, this year wasn't that fun to watch, right? Like, Paul George doesn't foster a spirit of a team that is enjoyable to watch. And maybe if you remove that. And these, we won't be good, but maybe at least we'll be having fun.
It'll be easier
and
it will be for them.
Sure. Easier to root
I'm
for.
I'm with you if I'm fine with for rooting for teams that aren't winning. Because
our expectations will be 20 wins, and anything above that is gravy, right?
My issue is, I think it's I'm concerned it's going to be the other thing, which is he's here all season.
Oh, right, right.
That's what I don't want to root for. That's
he's
what
just
I'm
not happy to play. And
he's putting in a half-ass effort, and we know he's on his way out the door.
But doesn't he? Isn't he still motivated to play for the All-NBA team? At least.
Yeah, but he only gets that money if he stays here.
Well, so
it would have to be a sign-and-trade.
You could do a sign-and-trade.
Right, but we're not going to do that for him.
Why not if we can get something back? If he does have the motivation to play potentially for an All-NBA spot, because it could lead to a sign-and-trade, which could lead to more money, that could make for a very exciting first half of the season. It could improve our position. But also, you know, I mean, shit, we can just go out and throw him out there for, you know, 45 minutes a game. I mean, what the fuck do we have to lose?
No, that's great. I think that's what we should do. And you're right. I mean, maybe there's some team at the trade deadline that's like, hey, yeah, this guy's averaging
take a shot
32 points a game. Yeah, yeah. Like this could, that could be the way to go. We'll just rent him for half a season and see if we can make a run at it. We're that close, you know.
Yeah, maybe Kyrie goes down with an ankle injury or something like that, and all of a sudden the East is wide open.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you what,
not wide open, but more open than it would be.
I feel like we should be able to get Kevin Love. That's what I feel like we should be able to get. Because half a season or three quarters of a season with LeBron, I swear to God, he can talk Paul George into staying, right?
Or even if he can't, just LeBron just wants to beat that. He doesn't need to win five
more
titles.
He just wants
to
not guard Durant. That's all he wants.
He wants to win the next year. Like, exactly. He doesn't care about building it. If he only rents Paul George for a half season, what does he care, right? He's going to win a ring.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
And they're not in love with Kevin Love. They never have been. Although I'm sure, according to Basketball Reference, his odds of making the Hall of Fame are 99.999.
Right.
Okay, so is this a better plan then, is to hold on to him until the trade deadline? Do you think there's going to be more offers at that point?
Potentially. I mean,
I think at this point, if you get an offer that you can live with, you take it.
I agree with that. I think that there are
too much risk to turn it down.
There are potentially more suitors at the trade deadline, but I mean, if they called tomorrow and were like, "Hey, you want Kevin Love for PG?" I'd probably ask for something else, but I'd pull the trigger at the end of the day.
Why don't you call the Lakers and be like, he's not coming to you. You owe me all this stuff. See if it works.
Sam Amick is a plant from us. Exactly. To lull you into a sense of false security.
That's right.
Right?
I like this idea.
I think that's how it works. Can they get tiny monkeys to ride on them? To make it really equestrian? Like a marmoset?